Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 33 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month, the fabulous month of July, we have a great interview with UK author, broadcaster and comedian Rosie Wilby. And you'll hear that great interview we did in a few moments' time. But before we get to that, dear listener, we're going to see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in on what I've been up to over the last month or so. So let's get going. First up, the Amazon charts, and top of the pops in the UK and the US as I record this is UK author, Emma Nichols, who I bet you is not going to forget the month of July 2017 in a hurry. Emma released her debut novel, Finding You, at the beginning of July, and she already had the next one ready, and she followed it up at the end of the month with Remember Us. And both flew up the charts around the globe, and they're still sitting pretty on July 31st as I record this. The story is of rich lawyer Lauren, who meets artist Anna, and that chance meeting changes their lives forever. The story, set over two parts, as I said, is Finding You and Remember Us. It's set in London and in Corsica, so a little bit of a European Mediterranean feel there. And obviously, you know, if it was set in London, wouldn't be as sunny, so everyone likes a bit of sun, don't they? And the books have clearly struck a note with readers everywhere, and I have to say they're worth a punt, as Nichols has priced them very keenly at just $1.99 and equivalent in America. And they're also on Kindle Unlimited if you have that subscription. So dash off and read those. They're getting very good reviews. Also doing well in the US and the UK is Kelly J. Barley's new book, Go, Leave, Stay, a novel written with her wife, Melissa Walker Barley. Kelly took some time off from writing towards the end of the year. She's produced a slew of books over the last few years. I'm not sure how many, but she's been writing a while. But readers have waited patiently, and this new one is about author Dove Jacoby, who has a rich, powerful girlfriend who's a British tycoon. We've all met them, haven't we? You know, British tycoons, they all just line up at the end of my road every day, you know. I have to say, no, stand back, ladies, I'm taken. But anyway, things don't end well between Dove and her British tycoon. What can I say? Soz Dove. Her dreams of a happy ever after are lying in a mess, frankly, until she meets psychologist Lisa Moon and life takes a different path. So this one sounds interesting, and co-writing is something I'm considering doing. So it would be interested to know how Kelly and Melissa penned this one, and if they got on all right, because it must have sort of been a new element to their relationship. Also doing well in the US is The Long Way Home by Roslyn Bain. Now, this one has a big, gnarly picture of a helicopter on the front, which screams army book at me. I mean, it doesn't literally scream because that would be weird, but you know, you get where I'm going. So the blurb says it's about a Marine. Okay, not army, but nearly army. The Marine is called Samantha Davis, and she's getting over war and the atrocities of it, mentally and physically, and living with a disability. She needs surgery. So enter hot doc Christine Matthews, who's going to help her through her rehabilitation. But will they heal enough to love again? It sounds like an interesting story. And I love the typography on this cover. It's great. It bleeds off the cover. I like a bit of strong red writing. I've just actually recently read Eliza Lensky's Don't Call Me Hero, which deals with a sort of a war vet, an Afghanistan war vet. And I really enjoyed that. That was a great book. So, war books. It's a thumbs up from me. Also doing well and propping up the UK top five is Jeanette Winston's Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit, which is a lesbian classic if ever I've read one. And I can tell you now that oranges, they're the only thing I eat now after reading that, along with Curly Whirlies, of course, which is the other lesbian staple. But I have to say, looking at the reviews for this one, some of them made me laugh, because I saw that Jeanette only has a 4 out of 5 stars, which is just bonkers, isn't it? Because Oranges is a fantastic book, frankly, and it really still has one of my top first pages of a book ever. I think my favourite first page of a book ever. It's just so brilliant and written. And I remember seeing Jeanette live in Sydney. It was about 10 years ago. And she just got up and recited that first page verbatim. It's imprinted in her brain, clearly. She's done it enough times. But she's a brilliant speaker as well. But anyway, somebody had left a review of Jeanette Winston's Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit, saying it's self-indulgent and bland. I don't know what they read, but, you know, clearly, if you're going to troll someone, don't do it to Jeanette. She'll come and beat you up. She will. She takes no prisoners. But, you know, sometimes I get, you know, we all get, as authors, we all get bad reviews on our books or low-scoring reviews. And sometimes I get upset about them because I'm only human. But then I see, you know, people leave bad reviews for Jeanette Winston as well. So it's part of life, isn't it? Anyway, there's also one of those strange books doing well in the US. It's got no reviews. And there's a penchant at the moment for covers with two women on them, and they're facing away from each other, like they hate each other. And the blurb just on this one just talks about one of the women's boyfriends called Charlie, so we'll skip over that. Anyway, if you've got any thoughts on those covers, answers on a postcard. So that's the chart roundup for July 2017, and we are over halfway through the year. So have you achieved all the goals that you set out in January? I keep saying January for July, but it's definitely July and not January. I know, because it's been a bit sunny. Not much sunnier than January, but a bit. So, yeah, let me know how you are going with your goals. I'm kind of on track. I mean, I have achieved some of them, and I haven't achieved some of them. I guess that's par for the course, isn't it? But I was listening to a couple of podcasts recently, and they were saying that you should redraw them. So I'm planning to do that this week. I'm going to redraw my goals and refocus for the last 5 months of the year, and see where we go. But before we get to what I've been up to over the last month, let's look at what happened in July in the land of lesfic. And July in the land of lesfic means only one thing. Yes, it's time for the Golden Crown Literary Society Awards. And this year they were held in Chicago. So who won them? Well, let's take a look at the key winners. You can find out all the winners over at the GCLS website, which is at www.goldencrown.org. But here are some of the highlights. Debut author was won by the lovely Wendy Hudson for Four Steps. So brilliant news there, Wendy. I've been out for a beer with Wendy. She's very lovely. Lisa Moreau also won for Love on the Rocks. And Kathy Arellano for Salvation on Mission Street. So well done to those three debut authors picking up gongs. Best Drama and General Lesbian Fiction went to KG McGregor for Trial by Fury. KG McGregor's been on this podcast. Well done, KG. Chris Converser for The Carrier. And Anna B. Good for The Big Sugar Bush. So well done to those three. Best Erotica went to a couple of anthologies, but also to A.L. Brooks, who's been on the podcast for her debut novel, The Club, which was really terrific. I read that one. So if you haven't picked that one up, I'd recommend it. Historical fiction went to Justine Saracen for Diane's Ghost, Susan Wittig Albert for Loving Eleanor, and the lovely Jay for Shaken to the Core. And Jay's books are always, always worth a read. Best Mystery and Thriller went to Lee Winter for Requiem for Immortals, Jessica L. Webb for Trigger, and T.L. Hart for Walkin'. So well done to everybody who picked up an award on this one. Especially Lee, who has been a great guest on the podcast too. And finally, the highlights. Best Traditional Romance went to Susan Maher for Chef Special, Rachel Spangler for Perfect Pairing, and Radcliffe for The Colour of Love. So three stalwarts of the lesbian fiction community there. So well done to all three of those, especially Susan, who I loved talking to on the podcast too. So the GCLS is over, but of course, if you're UK based, you can still get down to the Diva Literary Festival, which is being held on November 3rd to the 5th in Birmingham. And there are tons of authors appearing, including Kiki Archer, Stella Duffy, Val McDermid, Fiji Lee, Claire Ashton, me. I know Wendy Hudson is going along, who just won the debut author award, and loads of other terrific authors. They've got a really, really wide and diverse lineup. Have a look and see for yourself and buy your tickets. It's at www.divaliteraryfestival.com. If you just put Diva Literary Festival into Google, it'll come up. Also this month, we're in award season, clearly, saw the Amazon Storyteller Award, which picked six of the best stories from Amazon published this year, and the prize was 20 grand. Now, our very own lesfic author Jade Winters was shortlisted for her book Lost in You. So I went along as a Jade supporter, and together we drank a lot of Prosecco and had a jolly old time. And she didn't win on the night, but to get shortlisted out of the whole of Amazon is quite an achievement. So well done to Jade. And if you haven't read that book, pick it up now. And finally, a bit of news from me. This month, I approved the audiobook of Nothing to Lose. And by the time you hear this, it should have hit the digital shelves. So hooray for that. I started the process of auditioning people for this book back in April, May. So it's been like sort of 3 or 4 months of back and forth with this. But it was a really interesting process, I have to say. But it was kind of like learning how to do publishing all over again, because I just wasn't sure. I wasn't sure what to do at all. It reminded me of, 3 years ago when I started out on this journey. So it was interesting, but I had a fabulous narrator in the form of Gabrielle Baker. So big up to her if she's listening. And she patiently answered all of my questions and made all the required changes that were needed. And she was all around really brilliant to work with. I've heard some horror stories from other authors who have worked with different narrators, and I chose well. She did a great job and she was lovely. So I hope you'll give Nothing to Lose audiobook a try. If you're listening to this, hopefully audiobooks are your bag too. I know I love listening to podcasts and audiobooks. And I will also have some audiobook codes to give away if you think you'd be interested in listening to the book and then leaving a review for it on Audible. So if you'd like a free code, get in touch with me at mail@clairelydon.co.uk. That's mail@clairelydon.co.uk, and that will be on a first come, first served basis. So fastest finger first and all that. As well as my audiobook in July, I've been working away on my next book, which is nearly done in first draft. And then I plan to resume the next book in the London series, the final chapter, follow up to A Girl Called London, which has done very well this month. I don't have titles for either of these books. Do you know what? Me and titles are not friends. I think that's why I enjoyed doing my All I Want series, because it was just a dream. I just picked the next season. Didn't have to worry. But I really do need to pick titles, because I need to get the covers done and all that. But it's, I'm terrible at titles. So I don't know. Maybe I need to get drunk and it'll come to me or something. Maybe. Anyway, enough about me. Now it's time for the interview with the lovely Rosie Wilby. I hope you enjoy. So joining me today is UK author, broadcaster and comedian Rosie Wilby, who's just released her book, Is Monogamy Dead? Now, her book is non-fiction in a change for this podcast and asks, is monogamy dead? By journeying through Rosie's life, shining a spotlight on all her relationships and asking some searching and sometimes awkward questions. So there's much to talk about here. So without further ado, welcome Rosie.
Hello, Claire.
Hello, how are you?
I'm okay, thank you. It's interesting sort of talking about is monogamy dead being different because it's non-fiction. I mean, I very much tried to have a sense of having a narrative and having some elements of having the structure of a fictional book or a novel. And in some ways, I think our memories of the past are semi-fictionalized anyway, because memory is such a malleable thing and we always remember what happened differently, probably to somebody else who was there at the same time. And so I think that's quite an interesting idea. And so I don't know, I went to a writer's retreat last year where the non-fiction tutor was, the Lambda Queer Writers Retreat, and the non-fiction tutor was Sarah Shulman. And she said this wonderful thing on the first day and said, non-fiction is the story of an idea. So I very much kind of took that concept and ran with it.
Yeah, no, definitely that comes across. And I think all the best non-fiction actually is takes all the sort of the elements of fiction and makes it into a story, and that's what makes that's what makes non-fiction interesting. Otherwise, it'd be a very dry book, and we don't.
It would.
And we don't want that when we're talking about monogamy, do we?
Not so much.
So, paint a picture of where you're speaking to us from today. Where are you?
I'm just in my living room in Brixton, yeah, I've just been doing kind of some admin and stuff for various festivals that I'm going to be performing at, Elfest and so on, coming up. I'm just kind of sitting and doing interviews and bits of promotion on the book like this with you.
Right. So, yeah, very exciting. And tell me a bit about just talking of the book and writing. Tell me a bit about your writing journey and how you got started how we got here. Because I know you've written a lot for newspapers. You've been published in some anthologies. Is this your first book?
Yes, this is my first ever book. And I think for anyone, I know you're obviously incredibly prolific, but I think for anyone writing that first one, it feels like quite a mountain to climb. I mean, writing 70,000 words just sounded so much. When I was so in a groove of, you know, a magazine editor could ask me to write 1,000 words, you know, and I could put that together very easily in half a day, you know. Mm-hmm. But then 70,000 words is just a huge undertaking, because it's not just like writing 70,000 word articles. It's having a whole structure, it's having a whole concept, it's how you're going to keep the reader with you, it's how it's going to be interesting and exciting, and there's so much. And obviously in my book, because it is nonfiction, you know, the chapters that have the sort of sociological and scientific information, there's a heck of a lot of research and work that's gone in over years of sort of touring my comedy show about monogamy and about sexuality.
Right, okay, yeah. So did this book sprang out of your comedy routine on it?
Yes, well, I've done a trilogy of comedy shows investigating love and relationships that began in 2010 with The Science of Sex, which was a show about attraction and sexuality. Then monogamy kind of became a question I was thinking about more in around about sort of 2012, going into 2013, when various friends were breaking up and one or two people had met new people, and there was a question mark over whether, was there an overlap with different friends having relationships. And so the issue of fidelity was something that I was really, really conscious of. And what did it even mean? Because, of course, lesbians are quite famous for staying friends with their ex-partners. And so to some extent, we do have interweaving and overlapping relationships, although, you know, in most cases in my own peer group, that wouldn't be simultaneous sexual relationships. But I think emotionally, we have lots of simultaneous connections. So I think gay women are really quite intriguing and quite interesting, and that's why there's quite a lot of focus on them in the book. But Is Monogamy Dead was the middle part of my trilogy, which went to Edinburgh in 2013, and then that's been followed up with a live show about relationship endings, which I'm doing in Edinburgh this year, called The Conscious Uncoupling, which also was on at the South Bank Centre last summer and at various other places throughout the year. And so all three of those shows have informed the book, because they all involved quite a bit of research into how our brains work when we're in love and lust, and how they don't necessarily work in the way that would make us most happy.
Right. Did you have like a light bulb moment when Chris Martin and Gwyneth Paltrow split up and they coined that term? Did you think, oh, I can take this and run with it?
Well, that was 2014, I think, when they were using that phrase, and obviously everyone was a bit like, well, what on earth do they mean? Yeah. I have to say, really, particularly follow a huge amount of Gwyneth Paltrow's advice. I'm not sort of sitting here steaming my vagina or anything.
Yeah, you're not on Goop right now, following everything they say.
No, I'm not. But when I started to hear her talking about that concept of conscious uncoupling, I thought that actually there was a really good idea behind that of celebrating many of the things that were good in relationship, even if the romantic and passionate and sexual part of it had ended and it had become more like a friendship, because interestingly that's what I think a lot of gay women have done over the years. So I kind of think that lesbians are the godmothers of conscious uncoupling. And also it's worth noting that I have had some contact with the therapist and author Catherine Woodward Thomas, who actually has written the book Conscious Uncoupling, and who did sort of come up with that language before Gwyneth, but then of course it was made very famous by Gwyneth Paltrow.
Okay. I bet is she bitter or is she okay? Because she's a therapist, so she'll get over it, right?
I think she feels a little bit like Gwyneth kind of sort of stole it.
Yeah. So as you say in your book, you did a lot of research for this book and for your stage shows, and a lot of the books you read didn't just sort of cast aside lesbian relationships and gay relationships and said everything that we have here is about straight relationships. But obviously your book sheds some a bit uncomfortable light on lesbian relationships, mainly saying that they're far more likely to engage in serial monogamy, having a string of long-term relationships but never settling with one partner. So can you tell listeners a bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's worth including a caveat that there's no absolute fixed rules for any group of people. But I think I had a series of light bulb moments when I started to hear a number of interesting statistics over the past few years, one being that the rate of civil partnership dissolutions for female couples was twice as high as it was for male couples. And I remember that being posted on Facebook a few years ago and thinking, that's weird, that's kind of not what you'd expect. You kind of think of gay men maybe being a bit flirty and sort of going off with somebody else, and you know, you tend to think of lesbians being quite faithful and steadfast, and you know, maybe the cliches would be that, you know, you meet your girlfriend and then you move in together, and then, but of course what the realities that seem to be playing out when I actually started really observing some of my close friends and obviously looking at my own life was that it can be quite typical to do all of that and sort of move in and get the cat and you know, become quite intense in that relationship, but then, you know, after maybe 3-4 years kind of break up and then sort of start all over again with somebody else. I mean, the most extreme case was one woman who answered my survey who was in her 50s, who had had I think a dozen 12 serious relationships of a year or more,
right?
And you know, that's quite a lot of serious breakups. That's quite painful. Unless, of course, you know, you do what I've sort of talked about some of the kind of older generation lesbians doing, and actually, you know, very consciously staying in close contact with ex-partners and negotiating a friendship. So to some extent, if you did that, then you could even perhaps see serial monogamy as advantageous. You could sort of build a community of friends that you maybe had a strengthened bond with because of the shared sexual history. But I think somehow that isn't happening anymore so much, because normative ideas of marriage and heteronormativity are sort of creeping into the queer community. And so I think some of the things that I think worked actually rather well for previous generations of lesbians and gay men are sort of being put to one side. And I almost think that rather than us trying to ape straight people, wouldn't it maybe work the other way around? And maybe straight people should look at how gay people have sometimes actually come to quite useful solutions for the problems in longer term relationships and the conflicts and issues.
I mean, although, as you say, there's always examples, aren't there, of other situations. I mean, I think a friend of mine just came back from holiday, and his brother had a new girlfriend, and they went out for dinner with his two ex-girlfriends because they're all still friends and they all get on. That was interesting. And I think for a time my cousin actually did live with her husband and her ex-husband. But I think they're sort of the exceptions to the rule.
Interesting.
I suppose as for me personally, I don't stay friends with my exes. I never have. So that's
right.
There you go. That's an interesting one for you to psychoanalyze me on that one. But you're very open and honest in this book. And you take us on a journey through your life and detailing your relationships and how they started and how they faltered. And how was your experience of seeing that written down on the page? Because I know you've done it for comedy, but I imagine it's a different experience seeing it in a book.
Definitely, because, a whole number of reasons. Obviously, in the book, I've... not just tried to be funny, you know. I mean, even in my comedy shows, there's often a mix in tone of the sort of poignant and personal and the provocative, as well as just the kind of funny, daft stuff. But I think in the book, there's definitely some. Jim at Gays the Word was introducing me on stage. We did a little early launch the other week as part of Pride in London, and he introduced me and was saying, oh, it's actually quite a serious book, you know. I think he'd been thinking he didn't really like comedy and it wouldn't be for him, but he, you know, was like, God, you know, it was really compassionate and really interesting and fascinating, and you know, he really enjoyed the book and sort of hadn't been expecting to, because I think he thought it would just be kind of quite throwaway and comedic and sort of just sort of laughing at how we have our relationships. But really, there's a huge amount of deep thought that has gone into it. But yes, it is really weird kind of seeing it on the page, particularly at the moment I'm in the middle of recording my audio book. There are some bits that are really quite strange to sort of read out. Because obviously if I was doing readings in public at a launch or at an event, I would choose, there are kind of a few different bits that are either funny or a bit poignant or personal, but there are some bits about sex or about how I feel about consent and things like that, that I hadn't really anticipated me having to read them out loud, and those bits were quite interesting to read out.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the advice given to most writers before you hit the publish button is read out your book, read it aloud, because you'll pick up so many things, and that's for fiction, and I'm sure it works for non-fiction as well. And I suppose, but because of the subject matter you're doing, I'm sure it's sort of quite a little bit raw sometimes when you're reading it aloud.
Yeah, definitely. But I think, to be honest, if it wasn't, then I wouldn't have been being authentic enough. Wouldn't have been going to the place that I wanted to go.
Yeah.
I've had some lovely feedback about it so far. And I think people, maybe it won't be for everyone. No book is. But the people that have been really touched by it and moved by it, I think they wouldn't have been if I hadn't have, like, really investigated my own feelings and life and how I felt personally about this stuff and how my experience had coloured that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I really enjoyed the book, I have to say, as well. So, no, I think you did a sterling job, and you really are sort of searingly honest, which makes it a deeper book as well. So,
yeah.
And what's been the reaction from friends and family? Have they been surprised at some of the things in it?
Well, it's obviously it's not officially out just yet. I mean, the people who have seen it are sort of people who've seen the kind of, we've got early copies that have been available at sort of that exclusive early launch last week.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, probably the most interesting person who I felt needed to read it before it got, you know, before I pressed send the final version to my editor, was my new partner. And that was obviously really interesting. I mean, you know, we've been together since November last year. So she obviously appears at the end of the book, just her initial S. You know, beginning a new relationship when you're just about to publish a book called Is Monogamy Dead is quite interesting. You know, and I needed to explain where this whole journey had come from, where these questions had come from, and what my take on it was. Because, of course, if you're asking that question, most people, most sort of media people who've interviewed me when I did that comedy show a few years ago, the assumption is that you're going around telling everyone that we should have lots of multiple lovers and go to sex parties and go swinging and all of that. And whilst I kind of make no judgment about people who do that, because I think it's, if you can be really honest about what you're doing and you're that in touch with your sexuality, I admire and respect the friends I know who do have multiple partners and negotiate that all really successfully.
Mm-hmm.
But I think personally, that's not what I'm looking for so much as kind of really good, healthy, strong emotional connections. But I think to do that, you do have to communicate on a deep level in the same way that I think the friends I have that are polyamorous have done. And I think in my monogamous relationships before, there hadn't been that level of communication. There had been a lot of assumption, because of course relationships and a lot of the rules and boundaries around them were always just assumed. And I think not talking about stuff is not very healthy. But I guess if you don't realise you don't need to talk about it, then you don't end up doing so. But I think that's one of the main messages of the book, is how important it is to talk.
So you've actually there, because you were saying that there's an element of fiction in the book, i.e. it takes a lot of the structure of story, and if you're the main character, then you've come the full journey of your character arc, and you've learnt and you've implemented it into your new relationship. So hooray!
Yeah.
Hooray!
Yes, hooray! Yeah, yeah. No, it's
you fulfilled your character promise.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, to some extent, it's really, really weird, because I suppose it's really weird. I felt like I was almost manipulating my life because I had a book deadline. Like, I knew I needed a happy ending. I mean, for my own sanity and personal life, but also for the book. And it's really interesting how that process hurried it up. Because I was on a bit of a hiatus writing in kind of October, November time, because I was a bit, my personal life was kind of, I was thinking, you know, I just don't know if I'm capable of having a new relationship again. And I felt like that question had to be answered. I didn't know if I was capable of having sex again. I didn't know if I was capable of intimacy again, because it had all been quite a difficult journey for me. And so it was almost like, that having the pressure of writing the book and really wanting to have a happy ending kind of really pushed me out the door to go on dates and feel like, yes, I can be in that place to meet somebody. And it sort of gave me a bit more of a boot up the arse to get out there and do it, I think.
Yeah.
But that's not to diminish the fact that when I did that, I actually met someone who was incredibly compatible with, and who was, you know, I just luckily, for the first time, I probably met someone who was so many of the things that I was looking for.
But probably because you knew what you wanted this time round, perhaps.
Probably, so, yeah, because I had done quite a lot of analysis. But even if you know what you want, you don't always find it, of course. But yeah, I was pretty lucky that I found someone that really did tick all the boxes in some of the less obvious ways, and more of the ways we deal with emotion and feelings and just kind of existing in the world, which is, yeah, it's sometimes a hard thing. It's not really something that you can encapsulate with a list of your favorite TV shows or music or movies or the kind of questions that you get on dating apps. It's something about, you know, ambition and aspiration and dreaming and, you know, just kind of more difficult things to really really pinpoint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So and the book, in the book you do also say about the, you were talking about the survey that you did, and as part of your research you asked people what they considered to be cheating, and some of them thought it was kissing, and some of them thought it was staying up all night just talking to someone. were there different sort of survey results depending on the sexual orientation?
Yes, I mean, I did a relatively small survey of 100 people. It was a free survey on SurveyMonkey. I don't claim to have done a vast scientific survey, but still, 100 is enough to start making some, you know, some kind of predictions about maybe how we feel about monogamy and fidelity. And really, the one point that I was looking to perhaps prove, or the question I was asking, was, is there a one-size-fits-all monogamy? Is it really that black and white? And it was becoming very clear quite quickly that it wasn't, whatever sexual orientation the respondents were. I mean, there was a spread in my survey, although purely because of who I am and how it was circulated via social media, etc., there was a higher skew towards lesbians than you would sort of get in a normal, very random sample out there in society. So I think that did sort of skew the results a little bit. I noticed when I had a last minute kind of surge of lesbian responses, it did bring the number of people who'd had affairs or who admitted to having affairs down. But there was this idea of the number of people, number of serious partners and serial relationships actually going up, so there was less sort of infidelity but more serial monogamy. So that was kind of an interesting pattern that was noticed there. But I think in general the key question was that what counts as cheating, and the fact that for some people it was far more defined along emotional lines rather than sexual. And I think there are two key chapters where I take on monogamy near the beginning of the book, and one is, what is monogamy? Is it lifelong versus serial? And the other one is, what is monogamy, emotional versus sexual? And I think they were the two questions that I wanted to take on, because we seem to have got an idea about what monogamy is, and I suppose I wanted to challenge that a bit.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, and it's definitely a very interesting read. It's very funny, very raw, and you detailed the time you went along to a lesbian only sauna, which for listeners they should definitely read just for that incident alone. Wouldn't you agree?
that's quite a fun one to read out at events.
Yeah, yeah, and. Sort of at the end of the book, were your expectations during your research met, do you think? And the question, is monogamy dead? What's the answer?
Well, I should say people need to read the book.
Exactly. Yeah.
But obviously, I think the fact that the journey took me over really a 7-year arc of writing and researching 3 comedy shows and then writing a whole book and doing a TED talk and doing pieces for Radio 4 and doing articles for all kinds of magazines and stuff, you know, the fact that it's been such a journey, it means that I had no idea just how complicated all of this was, how deep and profound all of this kind of question about, you know, because really thinking about fidelity and what that means to us, it goes to the core of our own identities and who we are in our relationships, why certain aspects of fidelity or loyalty are more important to us than other ones. It really sort of goes cuts through to some really quite personal and deep stuff. So it is quite a big question. And I think, if anything, the disappointing thing is that ultimately I didn't necessarily find an answer, but I did find an answer for me, I suppose, in that I've sort of gone on that arc of thinking that polyamory or multiple relationships would be a great idea, having always been very monogamous, and then coming back to some kind of middle ground, in a sense, in a more informed version of monogamy that is informed by some of the really, really compassionate ideas that I learned from some of the polyamorous people that I spoke to, and some of the great level of communication that they had in their relationships. And this idea of emotional monogamy, which I think is what is most interesting to me, and how we do have more than one relationship in a sense, because we have friends and people that we care about.
Yeah, definitely. I've always thought that one person can't be everything to you. So that's why you need friends and all other people around you as well to lead a fulfilling life.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's a takeaway for today. And you spoke about it being quite daunting writing this book, the first sort of time you've come upon the mountain of 70,000 words to climb.
Yeah.
Did you find any processes that worked for you when you were writing it?
Well, when I went to, I think really the turning point was going to Lambda, mm-hmm. And that was in July last year in Los Angeles, and it was just such an adventure. It was really incredible. It was the first time I'd really travelled that far on my own. You know, I was even just scared about getting on the right plane or whatever. and it was really, really fascinating. It was so interesting to work with a group of writers and be the only British person there, one of the few kind of white people, one of the few cisgender people. It was such a diverse group of about 10 or 11 people in our nonfiction group, of such different backgrounds. And I was, you know, I was just this kind of white middle class British girl, and, you know, just like, wow, you know, I'm meeting people who are, you know, from such different parts of the world, from such different backgrounds, who have transitioned gender or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was just so interesting to get feedback on my work from people who came from a very, very different sphere of experience. And that was just so exciting. And what I started doing there was, we were given like just a lined yellow A4 pad. It was just like a sort of legal notepad. And I started writing quite a bit of stuff just out by hand. And that was really interesting, because it seemed like a ridiculous thing to do, to sort of write a lot of a book out by hand and then type it up. But the first few chapters, that is what I did, because I found, for me, the imagination ran a bit more freely, particularly as it was still quite a nice summer outside, and I was going outside into Brockwell Park and sitting and writing in the walled garden in Brockwell Park was where the first chapters were written. And I really ripped up a lot of what I had already written, or at least kind of chopped it up, and bits of the original bits I'd written do end up in different sections in the book, but I was jumping around too much. So writing out by hand and then sort of typing stuff up later on was how I kind of really got going, because I felt when you're writing by hand, you can just get into a real flow, and you just sort of, the words come from your brain to the page in a different way. When you're on a computer, you just want, it's too tempting to cut and paste and chop around and not just have a real flow, a real stream of consciousness, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's interesting. I've just been plotting out my new novel today, so I do all that by hand, but I couldn't, writing actually by hand, I couldn't do that, I don't think, so that's interesting. And then did you switch the computer later on?
Most of the later bits were written from scratch on the computer, but I often write loads of scribbly notes first before I'm writing a section that just to get my mind. I mean, I did do, because I wanted to get a sense of a narrative arc for each, there are sort of four parts. Part one is by far the biggest, because that's the first half of the book, but for each one there was a narrative arc, and I sort of actually literally drew an arc on the page with the different chapters and sort of looked at where I was moving to. And I had to, obviously, my book does some quite complicated things with zipping around in time as well, and I had to really, really think about timelines and mapping out those, mm-hmm. Because the two middle sections, parts two and three, actually flash back in time and then sort of sometimes zoom forward again to the current timeline, which is even not completely current day, because of course I was sort of running from about 2012 up to sort of now. So yes, I had to really, really think about timelines and had to plot those out carefully on paper.
Mm-hmm. So now you've done a non-fiction book, any plans to write a fiction book in the future?
Possibly. I certainly wouldn't rule it out. I mean, I think some of the thinking would be the same, would be similar. So yes, you know, I certainly would think about it. We shall see.
Okay, watch this space. And are you a reader of lesbian fiction, generally?
I mean, I love, you know, some of the classics, you know, the sort of Stella Duffy, Sarah Waters, Jeanette Winterson, you know, all the kind of real classic mm-hmm. names.
Yeah.
So, yes, yeah.
Yeah, cool. And what would you say was your favourite thing about writing the book?
Oh, gosh. I think it was just good to have whole blocks of time where I did go over to the creative brain, if you like. I mean, I do obviously write comedy shows, but they're often written in quite short bursts of time. Like a new comedy show might be written in sort of 3 days or something, and then actually what you do is you go and hone it by performing it in front of an audience, rather than staying cocooned in your flat writing as you do when you're writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different kind of process, and a lot of my time is taken up actually kind of managing my tours and promotion and doing, you know, as I have been doing today, just a ton of kind of quite boring admin, really. So, yeah, it was nice to sort of have to put a lot of that to one side for a few months and actually write and kind of have creative brain really take over for a slightly longer period than I would normally be allowed in the year, because, yeah, normally there's just so much. If I go to Edinburgh Fringe, there's always a lot of planning and admin and really quite tedious stuff that goes with that. yeah, and I didn't go last year because I was at the writer's retreat in LA. So,
So
I think that was the nice thing. It was sort of a luxury to give over a bit to creative brain.
And are you going, what's next for you? Are you going to Edinburgh this year?
Yes, I am. I'm taking The Conscious Uncoupling, which is my, well, newish show, although I was performing it last year. And that is going to be in Edinburgh at a venue called The Counting House in the Loft. It's a nice venue. It's a fairly good location. There's actually a really lovely independent bookshop just across the road called Lighthouse Books, which are going to be stocking copies of Is Monogamy Dead? And I'm going to be doing a little launch there as well on the 3rd of August, which is the first day I open my show in Edinburgh, and so I'm going to be doing a little Edinburgh Book Fringe event.
Very exciting. And you can, and obviously the cover of the book, for people who don't know, has got a picture of Rosie on the cover, so you can go and stand and pose beside it in this bookshop window and freak out passers-by, that sort of thing. Final question that I asked to all my guests: if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
It's such a weird thought to have in the back of your mind. I don't know. I mentioned one of my favourite writers is Stella Duffy. I really love her books. And I'm just looking at on my bookshelf, one of the other books that really inspired me for Is Monogamy Dead is How to Be a Woman by Catelyn Moran. So I think we'll just kind of turn her gay and sort of partner her up with Stella just temporarily. I hope Shelley doesn't mind too much.
I'm sure they'd both be game, you know. They come across as that type, don't they, really?
I don't know.
In the best possible way.
Yeah, I think they're kind of monogamous, though. Yeah.
No, I loved Caitlin Moran's book, and Stella Duffy also was one of the first lesbian fiction books I read, so that's pretty cool. So the book, Is Monogamy Dead? When is that out?
So it's out on August the 3rd.
August the 3rd, okay. And everyone can pick that up from bookshops and digitally and all that sort of good stuff.
Yes, it's on Kindle and audiobook and in paperback. And yes, you can get it from all good bookshops. Some of my friends, I think, have already ordered it and been able to pick it up from some of their local bookshops. So, yeah, and I've got various in-store launches and events, including... one in Edinburgh at Lighthouse Books on the actual publication day on 3rd of August.
Very good.
And obviously people can follow me on Twitter at Rosie Wilby, and I tend to tweet all of those details about events and launches and things that are happening.
And your website is rosiewilby.com, is it?
Yes, I mean that's kind of got most of my sort of older stuff on it. I for the newer bits of news, there is a rosiewilbynews.blogspot.co.uk as well. But yeah, Twitter and Facebook as well, facebook.com/rosiewilby. They're probably the good places to go for all the immediate stuff.
Cool. Well, this has been awesome, Rosie. Thank you so much for taking the time. And good luck with the book launch, and good luck with your show in Edinburgh. I hope it all goes really well.
Yes, well, if anyone is coming up to Edinburgh, please do drop in and come and say hello. It's quite a long old slog doing the Edinburgh Fringe. Not quite like writing a book.
No, quite intense though. Yeah,
different kind of slog.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. Do go and see Rosie. I've seen Rosie's show. She's a fantastic performer. So do go along and see that and buy the book. Okay, so thank you so much, and hopefully see you soon.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Take care.
That's the end of this lesbian book club, so this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you fancy dipping into any of my books, the London Romance series, the All I Want series, Nothing to Lose, or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, Bella Books, or any of the other digital outlets. I'm also on Twitter at Claire Lydon, so come on down and follow me there. I love a tweet me. I'm also on Instagram at Claire Fick and on Facebook, Claire.Lydon. Thanks to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And make sure to tune in to the Lesbian Lounge for all the latest LGBT news and views, along with Ragtime, the other great podcast on the platform. Join me next time for more hot book club action, where I will be interviewing Kate Christie. See you then.